Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of flavorful Kroger 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound. Then buy two, get two free on select varieties of delicious Doritos, Tostitos, or Ruffles chips, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Paul J. Welcome to TheAnalysis.News. Please don't forget the donate button and subscribe button and such. And thank you to everyone who has already donated. And we'll be back in a few seconds with two organizers inside Israel fighting for what they say is peace and equality. The recent Israeli attacks on Gaza and ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem has raised even higher the Israeli chauvinist and militarist sentiment inside the country. One poll found that 73% of Israelis wanted the attacks on Gaza to continue. A new government has been formed, but it appears as right-wing as the now ousted Netanyahu. It's even more difficult to organize inside Israel for peace and equality between Israelis and Palestinians. Standing Together has been a leading voice and an organizing body for Palestinian and Jewish citizens of Israel. They say that they will continue their work because, quote, we are not willing to return to, quote, normal. They say that struggle for a society in which all Arabs and Jews enjoy security, freedom from violence, safety in homes and on streets and in the cities, and most of all, equality. Now joining us to discuss the current situation in Israel are two leaders of Standing Together. Rula Daoud is co-national director of Standing Together, the joint Arab-Jewish progressive grassroots movement. Rula is a speech pathologist in her training and former profession. She started her activism in her current city of Lod, where she's coming to us today, around issues of women's rights and gun violence and promoting partnerships in mixed cities. Rula worked as a community organizer at Standing Together for 2 years, where she produced numerous events and organized protests with hundreds of activists before being appointed co-national director. Alon Lee Green is the founding national director of Standing Together. As a teenager, Alon Lee was active in organizing Israel's first trade union of waiters in a chain of coffee shops. As leader of the union, he led a 6-week strike, was fired by management, and then returned to his job by a court order, eventually won the strike and signed the first ever collective agreement in Israel's restaurant industry. He went on to found Israel's first national waiters union and has appeared numerous times in the media speaking about young workers' rights. In the summer of 2011, he played a prominent role in Israel's social protest movement and convened some of its largest rallies. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
So, Rula, start with a little bit about more about your own background and how you got involved in Standing Together.
Actually, I'm originally from up north. I'm from a village called Kfar Yassif. And as a Palestinian citizen of Israel, we basically grew up being non-political. It's from the generation who was born for parents who actually lived through martial laws that was inside of Israel. And you grow up in an environment where it's hard for your parents to accept that you want to be political or you want to have political issues fighting for, because they come from a place where they were very oppressed. So the journey of becoming an activist began, I think, in my 20s, basically. And you know, just living in Israel as a second-class citizen, it puts you in many circumstances where you understand that you are a second-class citizen, where you basically have injustice in many points, in many periods of your own life. And at a certain point, it came to a place where I had to basically choose. Do I choose to, you know, be silenced and to live my life in a regime where I am reminded every day that I'm not equal to other citizens? Or do I stand up and fight my own fights with people who believe in equal rights for everybody, in justice, in social justice, in ending the occupation and letting everybody in this piece of land in the Middle East have a peaceful, quiet life? And the turning point for me was actually when I finished my first degree and I wanted to travel because I had so many years where I couldn't really travel and didn't really have money. Anyway, so I wanted to travel, and at the airport, after so many years, I haven't really left to anywhere else. I was basically giving the whole phase of, security checking, where you have to go inside the room, and I have to, you know, actually undress myself and go through a very humiliating procedure. And that was the point where I actually broke, and I chose to stand up, and I chose to take a different path in my own life. And the moment I tried to actually enroll in many other parties inside of Israel, but I couldn't really find my own place, each one for a certain reason. And when I met Standing Together for the first time in my life, it was in the flag parade that you have in Jerusalem. That was last week, and is basically, you know, other extremists wants to have it also this Thursday. And there I saw Standing Together. I saw purple people having purple T-shirts, shouting out in Arabic and in Hebrew, against the occupation, against what's happening in East Jerusalem. And that was basically the first time I met Standing Together, and I chose to actually see what that grassroots movement can do and what they can give me. And I started becoming more active in Standing Together, and a bit by bit I understood that that was a place that can really understand, accept, and actually empower my own identity as a Palestinian citizen of Israel, and have the same fights, also Arabs and Jews inside of Israel. So that was the moment I found out that this is a political home for me. And since then, I've been with Standing Together.
Just another question before we get to Aaron Lee. This incident at the airport obviously is like a straw that broke the camel's back. It's an accumulation of, I guess, indignities. Yeah. As a child, when you say you became aware of what it means to be a second class citizen, what age was that? And was there a particular incident that really did it for you?
Well, I think, my parents, my family, my dad actually really empowered us to be more fluent, to learn more, to try to actually discover things all around us. So he kind of wanted his own kids also to be hardworking also. And the first time I left home, which is a small Arab village, was at the age of 14, and I went to work in Tel Aviv. And I think it was that year when I went on a bus in public transportation, because in a villages you don't really have public transportation. I went down into a market close to the place where I was living. And that was the first time somebody actually, you know, talked to me, called me as an Arab. And he said, "What are you doing here? Where are your parents?" And he gave some racist, comments about me being an Arab. there was a very difficult situation. And I think that was the first time I really understood that there was like Arabs and Jews. And it's like there's difference between the Arabs and the Jews in the place where you live. But it also was the first time I went out, you know, a more mixed city. It was also the first time I really had communication with somebody who's not an Arab inside of the country that I was living. So it was a kind of, you know, a different experience at the age of 13, 14.
We'll have to do another interview sometime and really do more of your history. And we'll do that hopefully sooner than later. Alon Lee, it is not an easy thing to be organizing, first of all, as a Palestinian, but it's also not an easy thing to be organizing as a Jewish Israeli to go against what seems to be the popular tide, which seems, you know, very right-wing, very anti-Palestinian at a level which I think is very hard for most people to imagine. So what's your story? You organized Waiters, a story I told in the introduction, but there's people that do fight for, you know, workers' rights and for their social rights as Israeli Jews, but they don't fight for Palestinian rights. So how did you get to there?
So my personal story as a son to a single mother that struggled economically to survive in the very expensive city of Tel Aviv, as a worker in a coffee chain that was exploited together with my friends at the workplace, I think I learned that equality is for everyone, or no one can actually get it. And I think you do understand in the workplace very well that if someone is worth more than you, if he or she, they get more rights and you're more exploited than them, eventually it will come to everyone. And it is a very, very important thing to understand about Israel, is that we have a lot of fights for equality, different kinds of equality. The LGBT community in Israel is very strongly fighting and struggling for equality in Israel. Women in Israel are fighting against violence towards women and are fighting for more budgets and support from the government for their personal security. The Arab-Palestinian minority in Israel is in a constant fight against discrimination, against the nation state law that was just recently passed by the Israeli Knesset. And when you connect all these struggles, you see a major fight in the Israeli society for equality. And you understand that a person that has a window from one fight, for example, the feminist fight or the LGBT fight, do understand eventually, these people do understand that these fights and struggles are connected. And this is why it is much more popular these days to be part of the fight for equality for Palestinians in Israel. And it's much more popular, even though it might seem different from outside, it's much more popular to be demanding an end to the occupation. Yes, in times of war, people tend to go to the extreme positions and they say things that just reflect the fact that the blood is boiling. But this cycle of violence, this cycle of war, we saw more and more people supporting our positions and actually taking a stand and taking an action. We saw commercial companies, you know, it's not our message, but commercial companies putting up billboards saying Jews and Arabs refuse to be enemies and that violence is not the answer and that the Arab-Palestinian society in Israel must be a part of the general society. This is something we didn't saw in the last cycles of war or in the last cycles of escalations and violence. So you do see that, you know, reality is complicated in Israel. In one hand, we have the most right-wing government ever elected. And even the change, you know, so-called change government is now being appointed, is not going to be a very, you know, liberal or left-wing or, you know, social government. But the people of Israel is more committed to fight for equality than they ever been.
Rula, one of the things that happened in the recent upsurge of the conflict was that there was a real rise of organizing, resistance, fighting from Palestinians inside Israel. It's you know, we've seen other times in the past where there's been conflict between Israel and the West Bank, Israel and Gaza, where Palestinians inside the country didn't really rise up in the moment. At least that's my understanding of it. But this time they did.
Yeah, well, I think if I'm going to relate actually to your first question, I think there is a new generation, a different generation. What we have witnessed for so many years was basically a fear of being political, fear of taking a stand, fear of asking and demanding what is yours. And last month, with everything that was happening with the Sheikh Jarrah and the eviction of the families from Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, and going on to 2 years before that, the violence that you had inside the Palestinian society, inside of Israel, all of them actually accumulated, because you could see a generation that was asking for solutions, a generation that understood that only by demanding what's yours, you can really achieve or make any change. And this time you're talking about people that are not afraid of being political, that are not afraid of going out and demonstrating, that are not afraid of marching from one city to another city for their own just causes. And these voices are basically being empowered from other, you know, parts inside of the Palestinian society of Israel also. And not only just by people, but also you see organizations rising up and also empowering that same generation. So there has been evolved from one place where we had fear in every day to a generation that has actually is willing to actually make a change. And by making a change, they understand that they can go out, demonstrate, shout out, and do the things that is actually rightful for people to do when you want to demonstrate. So this is basically the big really change that happened in the last few years. And you can also see that most of the people who also came out, you know, the Palestinian youth, the citizens here, are also young people who have been driven by other calls and struggles that have been led in other cities. So you had this kind of feeling that we have a power, as you know, as one people here inside of Israel, and we just wanted to show that we really have a just cause, and we just went out to the streets, and it's been happening for several weeks right now, and once it happens, you see more people joining you, so it's kind of empowering everything that started. I do hope that this kind of awakeness really goes on beyond to these weeks and beyond the period where we come to a more violence and war against Gaza, and just moves on to really make a real difference inside of the Israeli society. So I do hope that this is just the beginning for something that is much more bigger.
Alon, how are Israelis responding to this awakening amongst the Palestinians in Israel? Does it make them, rethink where things are heading, or does it actually consolidate a more right-wing position?
You mean Jewish Israelis, right?
Jewish Israelis.
Jewish Israelis. So it's a diverse situation, of course, and you see a lot of kinds of responses. The Israeli right-wing, the Israeli Jewish right-wing, is trying to use this uprising, this wave of protest in the Israeli mixed cities, in the Arab municipalities around Israel, and to claim that all Arabs are violent, and that the Arab society in Israel is preferred to be recognized as Palestinians and not Israelis, like they cannot live with this complexity that are both Palestinian and citizens of Israel. They're trying to use this situation to say Hamas is actually leading the Arab society in Israel, and that you can see Hamas flags in in demonstrations or funerals of people that are shot by the Israeli police inside the cities of Israel. And by the way, they just cannot differentiate between a green flag with an Arab reading and another green flag, because there are also Arab movements, Muslim Arab movements inside Israel having a green flag with Arabic on it, and it's not the Hamas flag. But they try to use this situation and to push the general population further to the right and further into positions that are discharging of the Palestinian struggle for independence, you know, of Palestinians and for equality inside Israel. But we did see also a big wave of support among Jewish Israelis saying that it is a struggle for freedom, it's a struggle for equality, and that the young Palestinian citizens of Israel that were awakened in the last weeks, it's an amazing, you know, you look on the social networks and you see something you've never seen before. Like people, one after the other, they're changing their profile picture into the, you know, to the red color of this struggle. They're adding the purple, you know, of our movement to their as badges to their profile. People are, you know, sharing things. They it's catching like fire. And you see a lot of empathy and a lot of support from Jews. You saw a lot of demonstrations all across Israel in these days of war and escalation, of Jews and Arabs coming together, not only saying, you know, coexistence and you know, this very obvious things, but saying the war must end, the occupation must end. We need to see equality. And I'm talking about thousands of citizens in the time of war. And usually in the time of war, people are, you know, the politicians, even the left-wing politicians in Israel are saying, now the guns, you know, are shooting, wait, let's see what's happened, and then we'll talk about the consequences and what is actually going on. But this time you saw a lot of Israelis, Jews and Palestinians, going out to the streets. And it's an interesting phenomenon. It's also an interesting phenomenon to understand that whenever the government is trying to attack the Palestinian minority inside Israel and to delegitimize the representatives of you know, of Palestinians in Knesset, it actually creates the opposite reaction. And more voters, Palestinian voters, are going out and vote. We saw, you know, the largest fraction ever of the joint list, 15 seats in parliament, where, you know, they were exactly under attacks and attempts to, you know, to kind of create a suppression of Arab voters in Israel. So that worked counter. Wise for the government, and you also saw it now. They tried to delegitimize the Palestinian community in Israel. It didn't work for them.
Rula, let's deal with the big underlying question, and then we can kind of get into some other issues. As long as Israel is defined as a Jewish state, can Palestinian Israelis be anything but some form of second class? And let me add to that, if Israel's defined as a Jewish state, how do you ever get to a point of either a legitimate two-state, although it seems to me most people have given up on a real two-state solution, which leaves you with a one-person, one-vote situation. At least that would be the demand. That'd certainly be what democracy looks like. Of course, then you have Palestinians have 52% of the vote. So what's your thinking on how this gets resolved, both in kind of a more short-term way and longer-term way?
Well, I think that if I am taught something from third grade until ninth grade, is every time that you open a book of history, you have this sentence written as Israel as a Jewish and a democratic country. I think it had been proven wrong. Repeatedly. We say every time when anybody says that Israel is a democratic and also the land of the Jews, we say that Israel is a country that acts to its Arabs because as if her being Jewish and gives the democracy for its Jews citizens. So I think we all understand and realize that as long as we have a country that is based on ethnicity and based on making citizens first class and second class, we can't really achieve democracy. We can't really achieve equality. We can't really achieve a community or a society that is equal for everybody. So I think that answers your first question, maybe. For the second question, I think when we talk about the solution, this is a really big question that doesn't really, you can't really have an answer for it in 30 minutes or even in 1 minute. But I think that the very basic thing that we must all agree on it, that the solution has to be a rightful for both nations, for both people. And I think coming from a place of a minority inside of Israel, from a place where I can't really feel belonging to the country I am in or to any of its symbols, and it's really hard for me to feel as a real part or citizen of this country, I would really want us to achieve a place where we really have equality for both nations and we have both people, Jews and also Palestinians, deciding their own fate. People sitting in one room and talking about that solution and not having, you know, others deciding for both of us what is the right thing and what is the wrong thing. And I think that solution must talk about justice for both parts, for their own independence. The solution must actually be agreed on both sides. And that solution must really talk about freedom, equality, and independence for both sides, and each and every one of us right, a basic right of living an equal and a free life.
If you link that to your first answer, that doesn't really happen as long as the only state is called a Jewish state, and you said there needs to be negotiation, but you know, if you're one of the negotiators, what's your vision of what you're negotiating for?
Well, my vision is actually I think I've said it 2 days ago. We had an argument somewhere, a bunch of us as activists, and there was that argument of, is it one country for all of us? Is it two countries? And what side are you in? And I gave this answer, and I said, I want a place, I want a country where I can go to a football, how you say in America, you say soccer, and cheer up and shout out the name of the country that I belong to and the name of the players that really are playing for me. And that kind of vision that I have, it makes it maybe harder and more complicated, because in the reality we live in, you have one country that is actually occupying, one nation occupying another nation. And inside of that country, you have also, you know, small, you know, we're not such a small, but we are a minority as Palestinian citizens of Israel. And every time we want to have that kind of a balance of you as a Palestinian and also being a Israeli citizen, it's very hard to see, you know, a future where all of that happens in just one simple solution that says one country or two countries. So my solution, I choose a reality where I can be equal, basically, where I can have the same rights. When I call up for an apartment to buy or to rent, they're not going to ask me for my name and what the meaning of that name, and am I an Arab, or where do I come from? So I would just cheer for a place where I am really equal to everybody else and my own identity doesn't scare anybody. I think we're in a place that you have so many complicated issues and complicated struggles that it's not that easy to really have that question of, is it one country or two countries? There are too many factors inside that are playing, that is changing also rapidly because of the way we are living. And of course, we can talk about many elements that are actually combined all together and bringing us to a very difficult and complicated reality, but it is a reality that we are living in. And
Can I add just a few thoughts? First of all, it is important to understand that we don't separate between the struggles. Our struggle against the occupation, our struggle for freedom and independence for Palestinians is not separated for us from the struggle against Jewish supremacy inside Israel or against racism or discrimination of the Palestinians living as citizens of Israel, suffering from many injustices. And it is important for us to connect the struggles and to understand that we are fighting for justice, not just in because we're in solidarity with Palestinians, if we're Jewish, or because if we're Palestinians in Israel, we're solidarity with our families in the West Bank and in Gaza, but also we're fighting for ourselves, for our own self-interest of living in an equal country, in a country where our needs are being fulfilled, in a country where our government is not working against one-fifth of the population, but also against Ethiopians, against ex-Soviet Jews, against LGBT people. So it is what we do is to try and connect the struggles, but we will not also stay on the fence, sit on the fence and say, you know, we have this amazing vision of how Israel and Palestine should, you know, look like one day, and we'll wait until this day will come. We need to fight to really end the occupation in our lifetime. I wish it will not even be in our lifetime, it will be in the next few years. And we need to understand that what we're fighting is also, you know, people dying, people losing their families, people losing their houses, people losing, you know, their children in the recent war in Gaza. 69 Palestinian children died in Gaza. And this is a reality we need to change right now. So yes, we have a long-term vision. Yet we have dreams for this place, but we also are building a struggle right now on the ground with as many partners that we can get. Yet some of these partners will not be our partners in the fight for complete equality inside Israel, and they will not be our partners in all our fights against supremacy in Israel. But if they are willing to go with us at some part of the way, end the occupation right now and to end the blood circle and you know, end the reality where people are losing their lives, we will need to cooperate with them so we can build a majority inside Israel. We will continue to fight. You know, I'm a socialist. Yeah, I want to see this place being one socialist big state where people can fulfill themselves and have all the equality they can get. I'm cooperating with people that are not thinking like me. It's a necessity if we want to stop that.
So by talking about equality, by talking about linking the workers' struggles and the other struggles of Jewish Israelis you talked about with the Palestinian struggle, you, according to many Israelis, including most of the government, you're a traitor. The rhetoric against people who take a position like you do is as inflammatory as anyone could imagine, because I guess it's in the interests of the people that run Israel and benefit from the situation to keep people united on the basis of being anti-Palestinian, so they don't unite on the basis of what you say is their own interest. That being said, you say you want to end the occupation now. What does that look like?
It looks like no more Israeli military in Palestinian villages, no more arrests of children in the middle of the night just to be detained by Israeli 18 years old, coming with a gun, wake you up in the middle of the night, create a huge mess in your house and take children to be detained. It means no more casualties in Gaza. It means no more blockade on Gaza, no more bombings of Gaza. It means no more enslaving ourselves as a society to the occupation. It means the dismantle of all Israeli settlements in the West Bank and retreating to the borders of Israel, and not trying to occupy land, not trying to build more settlements and to take what is not yours. I know it is not the end of our vision, but it is a necessity right now. Because blood is being spilled, because people are, you know, just in recent days, dozens of people lost their lives in this region in just a few 11 days. This is something we took upon ourselves to stop.
You've got obviously this immediate situation that you just described. Somewhat longer term, and who knows how long, but in terms of demands, at least, if there's any kind of democracy, if that word's going to mean anything, it has to be one person, one vote. And one person, one vote right now would include the West Bank and Gaza, given that it's been, you know, under Israeli rule for decades.
So right now, even though it's not something I you know, I'm happy with, it's not my choice, but there is a very strong and big Jewish majority, national majority inside Israel, that seeks and support the right for self-determination of Jews living in Israel. Some of them will even claim it's the right for self-determination of all Jews in the world, something I really disagree with. Inside the Palestinian territories, there is a strong, big national majority of Palestinians supporting their right to end occupation, to live in freedom, and to self-determinate as Palestinian in a Palestinian state. This is a demand that you cannot ignore. If you put this majority with this majority, and you put them under one roof, the support and their will to self-determinate will not end and just disappear, you know, the other morning. I think it's a recipe for more clashes, recipe for more blood, and it is something we need years to work on. It doesn't mean we're not going to work on it. It doesn't mean we're not going to seek this, you know, complete equality in Israel. But the first step must be ending the occupation and ending the endless wars. If you ignore the fact that there are some people living under a military regime right now, and you jump, you know, just to the end part of your vision, some steps on the way might be ignored, and you will just, you know, have a different result than what you see. This different result can cost in a lot of blood. So what we say right now is that we try to build a coalition, an historic coalition and a historic majority inside Israel to first end the occupation. We are also having the fight to achieve complete equality inside Israel and to end Jewish supremacy in Israel. It is something that you know, we're working daily to broaden the camp that supports our stance and supports our claims and demands. But you cannot ignore that the majority of Palestinians want to live in an independent state. And you cannot ignore the fact that the majority of Jews in this land want to live in an independent state.
Rula, you want to pick that up?
I think that one of the things that we sometimes, maybe it gets lost because of we have to you know, bigger issues or bigger things to think about regarding the solution or what's supposed to happen in the Middle East is what, and this is one of the things that's, I think, the hardest for, you know, Palestinian citizens of Israel is so many times it's the story of Palestinians inside of Israel is kind of lost. Every time you talk about a solution, it's some kind of automatically we are addressed as, you know, fully citizens of Israel, and then we don't really have a say in what's happening, or it comes last, or we are basically, you know, again in that situation where again a second class, you know, sitting on the bench and just waiting for others to choose for them. And that is why every time we talk about the occupation and talk about the solution, every time they ask me, I have the same answer, that every solution that does not see me as a Palestinian, as part of the Palestinian people, all over, whether they are refugees living in Israel, living in Gaza, living in Ramallah, as part of one nation who is living inside of a country of Israel, and they should have their own rights, you know, our equality, social justice, and that does not, the fact that we are citizens of Israel should not make us as less worthy of being one part of that equation. And so many times when we have that discussion, it feels like we forget that you have 20%, more than 20% citizens, Palestinian citizens inside of Israel. And automatically the discussion becomes of, is it one nation, two nation, and how do we talk about the solution or react to it? And that is why I emphasize always that every solution must say that you fully understand the identity of the other side, and you give them the all the rights, equal rights for everybody. And I think that is the beginning of the solution. It's not the end of the solution. If you talk about the occupation, you must also talk about equal rights for everybody who's living here. And that is one point that I think is always missing whenever we talk about the occupation.
Okay, well, this is a long conversation, which we should do. We should do again, because I want to talk a little bit about the current politics of the new government in Israel. But definitely, we'll do this again, I hope, soon, and dig into this whole question. I mean, right now, most Israelis don't even want to call you Palestinian. You're an Arab. They don't want to recognize there are such things as Palestinians, especially inside Israel. I guess that's partly connected to my next question. But let me go to Alon Lee to start on this. Alon, the government that's now replaced Netanyahu is every bit as right-wing or more right-wing. And not only in terms of the Palestinian question, but even in terms of Israeli domestic issues. Where the hell is some kind of even centrist opposition, never mind the social democrat, Alon?
Let me start by saying that I'm happy that Netanyahu might possibly go away after 13 years of destruction and hatred and incitement and discrimination and creating more and more social and economic gaps in Israel. I would be very happy, maybe will happen in the next few days. I would be very happy to see him leave. Am I happy with the new government and the other option? No. It's, we're handing an extreme rights winger the prime ministry. We're handing a person with 5 or 6 seats, some of them started to leave him in parliament, the option to leave Israel, even though he has such a minor support. Who is giving him this amazing opportunity and gift? It's also the left-wing parties of Israel, the Labour and Meretz. They're doing that because the way that the political camps are organized right now, like the basic question of your political identity in Israel now, is not, socialism against capitalism. It's not occupation against peace. It's mainly Netanyahu for and against. And if you're against Netanyahu, right-wing and left-wing are meeting each other if they're against Netanyahu and forming a coalition just to block Netanyahu. They claim it will be a coalition that will do nothing but change Netanyahu and run the country and move it outside of the stuck corner that it has been into in the last years. Whether it's true, it's not true, because they will have and execute policies that will be right-wing policies. They will try and erase the Palestinian question, even though we see again and again and again that you cannot erase this question because it explodes in your face when you try to bury it under the rug. They will try and, preserve the status quo. They will try to, not change racist laws like the nation state law that has been passed 3 years ago. And I think they will learn that this is the left part of it. I don't agree that it's only right wing, because it's a question in Israel, you call them left.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What is left about these left wing, what you're calling left wing? Is there certainly in relationship to the Palestinian issue, there's nothing left about them, is there?
You will be surprised to know that the Meretz Party, the liberal Zionist left of Israel, they kind of moved to the left, and they've been more active in the question of fighting against the occupation from, you know, their own perspective of things, but they talk about the occupation, they talk about human rights in the West Bank, they talk even about Gaza from time to time, but then they are being quiet when there's a war, and they say it's not the time to go out to the streets, and they didn't join our rallies just until the day of after the war, until after the ceasefire. Then they came for the first rally we organized with thousands of people, and they, you know, they had a speech on the stage and stuff, but, you know, they waited until the ceasefire to do that. But they do talk about the occupation. They have some good parliament members that are active, you know. Mossi Raz, for example, it's an amazing example of a parliament member for Meretz that you will find every Friday in Sheikh Jarrah in the West Bank in demonstration, you know, rallying against the occupation. So it is, again, it's complicated when you look at it, but then there will be the partners of Naftali Bennett in the government. Whether it will allow them to work against the occupation and to protest even against the occupation, not to speak about executing policies against the occupation, I don't think it will allow them. It will be kind of safe to say that we will be creating the opposition space in Israel in the next few years. And you cannot put your hopes in the Israeli government or the Israeli parliament even, because no hope will rise from there. The hope will rise from the people that are choosing to act in this reality, and that proven again and again and again that they're willing to even get beaten by the police if you're a Palestinian citizen of Israel, or being arrested even just for posting something on Facebook, or just, you know, for being in a demonstration. You can come back to your home, go to sleep, and in the next morning, the police will knock on your door and arrest you for attending in a demonstration. So these people are bringing hope to Israel. These people are creating the opposition in Israel. And it's not only about opposition, but we want to gain power. And I think we hit a momentum in the last few weeks, and something we need to broaden and to bring more partners to.
Arula, before the election or in the lead up to the election, there was a lot of talk about how the Palestinian parties, of course, the Israeli press calls them Arab parties, but how the Palestinian parties would have more leverage. They might be, you know, be able to decide who forms the government. It hasn't turned out this way, as far as I can understand it. The Palestinian parties have wound up with very, you know, not really much leverage at all. You have as reactionary a government as there was before. What does that do in terms of Palestinians' feelings about the whole electoral process in Israel? Does it make them want to do more or give up on it?
Well, I think the fact that we had four elections in 2 years, and the fact that you had so many, the first and the second elections, and the third election, you could see a kind of a power that the Palestinians felt they had, because finally we had, you know, we could see a leadership, and we could see somebody fighting our fights and talking in our name. But it unfortunately didn't really last, because the political game delegitimized in a very harsh way these parties. And today, I think by understanding that also in the Palestinian parties you have left and right, and you have more conservative and more liberal parties, you can understand that the whole political map that we thought is relevant to us a few months ago has really changed rapidly. What we see right now by Ram, which is Mansour Abbas sitting in the coalition as a part of the more Islamic movement inside of Israel, actually show us that you have like conservative people and more right-wing people sitting together in one government. After so many elections, after three elections, that is what we have right now. So I think the effect that it will have on the Palestinian society there is going to be unfortunately negative on the political electoral way, because even if Mansour Abbas really holds it and brings and really brings some achievements, they are always going to say that you sat in a government of a real extreme right-wing people that talk about, you know, that the prime minister who's going to be talked about killing Palestinians in a very proud way in one of his rallies. And on the other side, if he doesn't bring back any achievements, also it's going to be, you know, backed up with, here you go, you sat down with the right, real right extremist, and you brought back nothing, no achievements for the Palestinian people, Palestinian citizens of Israel. So at both ways, I see it in the parliament way as a way of losing and not really achieving anything for the citizens. But what we really achieved when we talk about grassroots and when we talk about, you know, having power and understanding the power that you have in the streets in with the people, is that you could see that people basically rose up and went out and called out and shouted out and had rallies and demonstrations for weeks after weeks after weeks without even tiring or being any afraid with all of the political arrests that we have been seeing for the last few days. So if it gave us something, it gave us basically, you know, it made us acknowledge the power that we have when we organize as people and go out fighting for the things that we see as very important for us as rights in this country. So maybe in the, you know, in the political electoral place, maybe that part is lost. But I think the people that live here have eventually came to a place where they understand the power that we really have when we stand together.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for joining us on the analysis.news. And we'll be asking both our guests to come back again soon. Please don't forget the donate button and the share button and the subscribe button and all the buttons.
Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of flavorful Kroger 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound. Then buy two, get two free on select varieties of delicious Doritos, Tostitos, or Ruffles chips, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.